At California Psychics, we know that sometimes you can wake up thinking,
ugh, I don't know if I'm in the right career. Ew. Or the right relationship.
But whatever your life dilemma, at California Psychics, we'll give you the guidance you need to feel certain about your life choices. And because we only connect you with the very best, we guarantee if your reading isn't life-changing, it's free. California Psychics. Call 1-800-PREDICT today and get 20 minutes for just $20.
Payments start on August 1st. The only thing about that's really sacred about August 1st is that's when payments start. So they have to start paying billions of dollars to you and people. Are you a citizen of the country?
Yes, sir.
All right, good. You'll be very happy because you're going to be getting a lot of money. Just like they found a budget surplus. We have a budget surplus of $25 billion. Everyone said, how did that happen? It hasn't happened in many years. It happened because of good management and tariffs.
Well, just ask President Trump himself and he'll tell you it happened because of good management and tariffs. A budget surplus. So we've had in the last week here news of a budget surplus, but also we got a report that maybe inflation has ticked up a little bit. What does it all mean? I know you, like me, are always trying to put this information together. It comes out, it's like a fire hose. Well, that's why we have wonderful people like Taylor Riggs, co-host of the Big Money Show on Fox Business, and the person who can put these pieces together for us. Taylor, welcome back to the show. Thank you for being with us.
Of course, I'm going to do my best for you.
Thank you. Just let us have it. What kind of economic news have we gotten this week as far as surpluses, but also inflation? Like, where are you at on these reports?
Yeah, you know, inflation, I'm really mixed. CPI, about a third of it felt like it was tariff related when it comes to inflation. That was yesterday. And that's the consumer price. But then today we got the producer prices, which usually lead. So if the producers are feeling inflation, they'll typically pass it back on to the consumer. But producer prices today showed zero gain, 0.0% month over month. So we're getting a mixed read. Producers are not feeling any sort of tariff inflation. Yesterday's numbers show consumers are feeling about a third of that report felt tariff-y related. But overall, you know, it's been actually a lot better than people expected.
Yeah, that's kind of what my emotional, like, I'm constantly trying to tap into the emotions. I watch you wonderful people on Fox Business, and I'm like, are they freaking out or not? And if you're not freaking out, I feel a little bit better. It's kind of the barometer that I have.
You know, we try to bring the calm.
Yes.
to the storm. And I think, you know, if you had freaked out, you and I talked about this. You would have missed the route. The S&P 500, the markets are at a record high.
Mm-hmm.
If you had been so afraid of all of this and sold, I mean, you're up 6% for the year, to over 10% from the bottoming after Liberation Day. And so there's certainly appliances are up. Certain apparel items are up. But overall, the market is resilient. We heard from all of the big banks this week. Every credit card company, every auto loan lender, every mortgage home lender, they say things are pretty good. The economy is resilient. No one is defaulting massively on their credit card loan. So there certainly is a lot of good news out there.
Yeah, absolutely. Taylor Riggs joining us right now, the co-host of the Big Money Show on Fox Business. You can follow her on X at Riggs Report. A lot of talk about Jerome Powell. We know how President Trump feels about it. Doesn't matter what the topic is. We'll get a jab in there for Jerome Powell. I don't know what he's going to talk about if he does, in fact, resign, or what we hear potentially get fired. There's some talk about that right now. Anticipate action from if he still stays in this position for the next, I don't know, 10 months or so? Do you anticipate that he's moving in the direction of lowering rates?
Yes, it will not be in July. It will be in September, and December is typically consensus right now. And then we did hear from the president. We took the president live in our show at our noon Eastern hour because the president did come out and say that there have been reports that he will fire Powell. And the president said, I'm likely not going to do that. I'm going to let Jay Powell serve out his term through next May of 2026. And that's good, typically, because you really don't want the president interfering and meddling with that, even if you feel like Jay Powell has been political. Even if you feel like you've served up a jumbo rate cut 2 weeks before the election to juice Kamala Harris, it really is much better to have stability and let him finish out his term. So I actually love the president today coming out and saying He talked about it. He talked a lot with a group of Republicans about firing Powell, and they recommended that he do it. And the president said, but I'm not going to do it. I'm going to let him sort of finish out. But what that does mean is, yes, we'll likely get a rate cut, not in July, but in September, and then maybe December. And then we'll have to see, because inflation isn't perking up. But you could actually get a lot of high growth from the big, beautiful bill that is now the big, beautiful law. And that could actually spur.
That's a BBL.
Exactly. I love my co-anchor, Dagan McDowell. She said, we are not talking about Brazilian butt lift. I'm talking about the big, beautiful law. The new BBL is what we're calling it.
You get wild over on Fox Business, man. People don't even know.
Try to have fun.
We're speaking with Taylor Riggs right now. Let me ask you just like a, this isn't really like news of the day thing. This is a bigger picture, and I need to talk to a smart economist to get some sort of framing for this. But when it comes to Jerome Powell, I think I heard Kennedy talking about this on Outnumber today on Fox News. They're like, oh, should he fire him? Should he resign? Well, Kennedy starts talking about how we should end the Fed. And, you know, we've heard other people in the Senate make that type of comment. And then they start talking about central banking. And I'm thinking, I wonder what percentage of the American voting base, consumer base, tax base understands the concept of central banking and what the purpose of the Fed is. Is it possible for you to give me a very, very, very basic understanding of that?
Yeah, totally. So Congress actually created the Federal Reserve Act. The Federal Reserve Act back in early 1900s. I don't know the exact date. Basically, think of them as a group of big academics, big economists who get around and have two jobs in America. One is maximum employment, which is effectively watch unemployment rate and make sure as many people as possible can have a job. Their second mandate, as defined by Congress, is price stability, which is inflation. Make sure that you get, on average, over the long run, about 2% inflation. So the Federal Reserve, about 100 years ago, was tasked by Congress with this job. Love Kennedy. Oh my gosh, she's one of my favorite people here in this building, but I will disagree with her a little bit. She's a classic libertarian. I just don't think she likes government in anything. I'm a little bit more old school where, you know, I don't always love these big academics and these big economists, but I do like having someone that, or a group of people, who are mandated to really oversee the economy, make sure we don't have runaway inflation, to make sure that we are getting maximum employment for Americans. Now, we can agree and disagree with who's in charge, if they should be cutting rates, if they should be raising rates. But I actually think, I think we should put less focus on them. I would rather us focus on fiscal policy, which is what I think our Congress has done, try to rein in spending and pass pro-growth laws that boost the economy. And then that diminishes how reliant we are on the Federal Reserve. And I think in the last 4 years, we really got away from that, where we were running massive budget deficits, boosting inflation because of all the fiscal spending. So then we had to compensate by turning to the Federal Reserve to bail us out via monetary policy. So I'd like to make the Fed less important by passing bills in Congress through elected leaders that are focused on fiscal policy, pro-growth, lower spending, responsible legislation. And then I think that's getting to what Kennedy wants, which is reducing how important and how often we have to talk about people like Jay Powell.
And, you know, I would, you don't have to speak specifically to Jerome Powell, but you certainly can. There is danger, I'm assuming, in the Fed chair acting in a political manner?
There is. We've had a long, and I'm going to, confess, I come at this from a pretty traditional institutional background where, despite a lot of the complaints, I hope and believe and try to have faith in our institution that we need Federal Reserve independence from Capitol Hill and D.C. There has long been traditions generally of monetary policy and the Federal Reserve making decisions despite what the president wants. I think that that's good. You do not want those people in cahoots together. That being said, I think people feel very frustrated after they're cutting rates right before the election, which we know always helps the incumbent, and then they refuse to cut rates now when inflation right now is lower than where it was last October when they cut rates.
Right.
So that's where then we kind of got a little tricky last year. And that's why people feel like, well, you weren't independent last year, but now all of a sudden you want to claim independence this year. Over the long run, I like independence. And look, doesn't mean that the president and the chair can't talk. They should be absolutely speaking. They should be having lunches every other week. They should be in communication because you have monetary and fiscal policy that should work together. But it doesn't mean that they each have to do what the other one wants. But they absolutely should be open conversation.
Well, that's incredibly helpful, Taylor. I appreciate you walking us down that road, because a lot of what we end up hearing, you know, that the criticisms often come from a political base. So it's kind of hard to you know, pick out of these. Everybody's entitled to their opinion. Everybody can assess a situation and throw it out. God bless America. But to get kind of a measured take on it, we're really grateful for yours, Taylor. Thank you for coming on with us again today.
Always. My pleasure.
Take care. Bye-bye. We appreciate you. She is the co-host of The Big Money Show on Fox Business, Taylor Riggs, at Riggs Report on X. All right, let's take a quick break. The YouTube live chat poll, we spent pretty much the whole first hour on this, took a lot of phone calls as well. Is President Trump off course on the Epstein issue, yes or no? We are divided on this, which is an interesting for those detractors who say that we're just a bunch of people over here who are Trump sycophants and we take our marching orders and go. Maybe you should go take a look at the YouTube live chat poll today and see how those results are shaking out. Amber said Americans need to see the Epstein files. We aren't going to be hindered by the fear that President Trump might be in them. We deserve to finally know the truth, no matter how bad it might be. If you agree with Amber, come vote. If you disagree with Amber, come vote and leave a comment. Let's take a quick break. We'll be right back. Guys, bluegrass fans, I am.
Mm-mm.
No, does this music offend you? Does this does it like make you go, oh gosh, make it stop?
But that's not offending. That's just saying, oh gosh, make it stop. Like, I'm not like, oh my gosh, this music just makes me sick. I'm just like, eh, it's not really my thing.
I'm gathering that you're not a music snob.
No, I've gotten more and more chill when it comes to music the older I've gotten. I've become very open to a lot of different music.
You're refining your palate, Ethan. What about you, Brad? Do you like bluegrass?
I don't seek it out, but when it comes on, sometimes it's a mood. It's just like, I need to listen to this now because this is how this fits everything that I'm doing.
Ethan,
right now.
When you hear bluegrass, what image comes to your mind?
Well, I mean, for sure.
Bumper peeing for sure.
And a pickup truck.
Yeah.
Yep, a
one
dude.
One that looks like it's seen some things.
Pleated jeans.
What? Pleated?
With a button-up shirt and a cowboy hat.
Wait, stop. Pleated? Are you Googling pleated?
No.
Yeah. Pleated means, it's like the old kind, like, guys, stop wearing pleats. Just don't. Pleated is up around your waist, and it creates that little balloon around the waist. What did you mean? But you didn't mean pleated, right?
No, I don't think so. I heard in a cowboy movie one time, pleated jeans. So I just went with it.
Maybe it means something else that I don't know. That's possible. I don't think that there are many cowboys worrying about their pleats.
Okay, jeans.
Correct me if I'm wrong.
Jeans.
Yeah. Plaid?
Yeah, plaid can definitely be in the mix there. A little straw, a string of wheat in the guy's mouth. Definitely that. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then, like I said, in the background's definitely like a lone road, just an empty, quiet back road.
Gosh,
with just
cornfields right
on the side. Maybe beans on one side.
Ron says, banjos make everyone happier. You cannot play a sad song on a banjo. Steve Martin did a bit on that. Have you ever seen Steve Martin? You know who Steve Martin is?
I do know who Steve Martin is.
Oh, gosh, this is where I always back myself into. I'm asking you a question, and you're like, you've got to look on you like,
cheaper
hey,
by
nothing.
The dozen and father of the bride, right?
And yeah. King Tut. Have you ever seen him play the banjo?
Mm-mm.
He's good.
Mm-hmm.
Really? Like, actually good?
Yeah.
Really good. Like, he has a band.
What?
I would go see him and his band.
Have you seen him?
On TV.
Interesting. Steve Martin.
Janine comments on YouTube, banjo, barf.
I mean,
a lady, a few words. Yesterday, if you tuned into the, well, it's kind of weird. I don't traditionally wear green clothing, but yesterday I wore a green shirt. I would say olive green. You can go to the YouTube and see it if you cared that much. Today I have a camo green shirt on, and I was looking for that green shirt yesterday when I came downstairs. I was trying to get ready, and I was laying on the kitchen table. I knew it was because I just bought it, and I said to my 9-year-old, "Hey, Evelyn, will you go get my green shirt? It's on the table." And she's pretty good at being able to find things, and she couldn't find it. And she came back. She's like, "It's not there." And then I walked downstairs. Well, lo and behold, the green shirt sitting right in the middle of the table. I go, I picked it up, and I'm like, "What about this?"
You see, that's something I would do.
Well, she goes, "That's not green." And I go, "It most certainly is green. What color would you call this?" And she goes, "Puke green." And I just thought, there,
got 'em.
Kids are just like super, super direct, and they will not know at all what they're saying to you.
And kids,
they just let you have it.
And pretty much all dudes.
Dudes like, don't say that stuff to women, though.
No, not mm-hmm. not like that. I was meaning more so like if you, I would have probably done something really similar. Where like if you said, "Find a green shirt," and then,
"What color shirt am I wearing right now?"
It's green.
It's green.
But it's not the green that like, when you say, "Find
the green
shirt," it's not the green that pops into my mind.
There are shades of green. There's literally a shades of green resort at Disney World.
I am
for military
not
people.
Saying that this is right. I'm saying this is how the male brain works. It's simple.
What color is green?
What do you mean, what color is green? Yeah, that cup that Brad's holding right there. That's
Kelly?
Green.
It's like
Kelly
green. That's a bright green.
Yeah, that's a good green. That's
you
green.
Don't like my shirt?
I didn't say I didn't like
that's
your
exactly
shirt.
Exactly.
Kind of sounds like you didn't like my shirt.
I said that that's not the color green that I picture when you say think of green.
Really, what I'm gathering here is that you do not like the military.
You're right. Anti-military. I'm glad we got to
Gosh,
the point of this.
Ryan's
got
to get back here to shore up some common sense on this show.
Took a little while.
You're settling in nicely.
Hey, I'm not trying to, you know, say that that's not green, but Ender sure doesn't think it's green. Just saying.
Ender, no, he said that this is B.A. green. Thank you.
He said definitely not green.
He's also colorblind.
Wait, is he actually?
He thinks it's red. Is it red-green that's... Isn't that the
Anyway,
can you
the
dress,
male brain compared to children's brains,
can
not that different.
Can you dress yourself? Do you... Like, how do you prepare your closet, Ethan? How do you prepare your... I'm going... Let's put aside the athleisure side of things. You're going to somewhere nice, or you're going to put on a Sunday best or something like that. Do you need help? Do you... Or a trusty second opinion?
It's not that I need the help. It's that if I don't have the help, I have to think a lot harder. So I'm going to go to the help if it's there.
I'm going to
lean on my wife as much as possible.
Mrs. Hannaford, as in your wife, not your mother.
I said my wife.
I know that.
Oh, you're
I'm clarifying.
Got it, yes.
Does Mrs. Hannaford pick out your outfits for like weddings? Does she tell you what to wear?
I ask her. I say, hey, like, is this good? Do you want this? And here's the thing. She actually ends up being more chill and laid back than I prefer because I'm like, just tell me what to wear. I don't want to have to make the decision.
Is it because you're afraid of not looking nice or because you're going to put something on and she's going to say, why'd you wear that?
Annie, let's be honest. I'm always going to look nice. It's never a concern of that.
I do. You sit. Go sit in the Ethan chair. Get out of the Ryan Wiggins chair.
It's something with the chair, I swear.
I know. And Ryan is obsessed with these chairs.
With
he can't stop talking about these chairs. Do you feel like if you don't get help that you're going to... Are you at all self-conscious that what you put together won't meet the moment, or does your wife come and say, Ethan, don't wear that?
Well, it's all... No, I'm not concerned about what, like... I'm not concerned about getting picked on by her. I'm good laughing at myself. It's more so, like, I don't want to, you know, outshine her. I don't want to, you know, be underdressed. And, like we've talked about plenty of times on X's and Y's, you know, women will go through 9 outfits before picking out what they actually want to wear. So to save me time, I'm like, hey... Let me know, like, what you're wearing once you get to that point. And then based on that, off that outfit, you can kind of just, like, pick what you want.
I'm just curious if the end game here, like, does failure manifest in your own mind? Or does it come from an outside source?
I have already accepted not even that it's going to be failure. I'm just going to have to work a lot harder to succeed. So I would rather just say...
In whose eyes? Yours?
In mine. So, maybe in my wife's too.
I'm just wondering that...
Here's where this conversation got really difficult. As you said, excluding athleisure. Annie, like 85% of my closet is athleisure.
Well, I know. I mean, it's really hard to go wrong with athleisure.
Yeah.
If you have nice athleisure. Which is.
Yeah.
You've made a choice walking out of the house in athleisure already.
Correct.
So if you're going to a wedding, funeral, job interview.
Well, I'm not going to wear athleisure to those things.
That's why I'm asking what matters. You want help in those instances.
Yeah, because there's kind of, limited options. It's kind of limited options. So, we're working on it. That conversation has happened a few times. We're like, we need to add to, your nice clothing collection, Ethan. That has happened a couple
times.
Would
you be happy if she just went out and added for you and just put it in your closet and then you were like, there it is?
Yeah, I trust her enough.
And then you don't have to go through the shopping situation?
Yeah, I'd be okay with that.
You'd be fine with it?
I think so.
All right, let's take a quick break. Eric Schmidt's going to be on the show here. I think in a little bit we'll get to the bottom of that. They have a Votorama taking place on the Senate right now. So the senator is doing the job of the people and he's voting. We'll connect with him soon. Let's take a quick break.
Local stations couldn't happen at a worse time. With floods and natural disasters front of mind. When a flood happens, when a tornado touches down, when a hurricane makes landfall, people need immediate up-to-date alerts to stay safe. And sometimes, all too often, public broadcasting is the only way for people to hear what's going on. It's a matter of life and death. So why is Donald Trump so hell-bent on taking away funding from local stations that can literally save lives?
Well, Chuck Schumer there saying it's a matter of life and death that you have access to NPR. Why the heck are you listening to me on 97.1 FM Talk? I don't even understand. It's a matter of life and death, people. Let's get to our next guest. Senator Eric Schmidt joining us once again. Of course, the senator from Missouri. We're grateful to have you on. I know you're in the middle of a Votorama right now. We appreciate your time.
Sure thing. I just came off the floor. I'm actually the bill sponsor of the rescissions, and so I'm in charge of responding to the Democrats' ridiculous allegations and making sure that we get this thing done today. So it's an important day, I think, an important day to send the message to the American people that we're willing to vote to cut out this ridiculous waste and fraud and abuse, the $2 to $9 billion, and try to save some money.
I appreciate that, Senator Schmidt, with us right now. When you look at what the Democrats are willing to do, is there any dollar that the Democrats are thinking we should not be spending the taxpayers' money on this? Are they offering any type of solutions?
No, there's no limiting principle at all. I mean, they just want to continue to spend and spend and spend. And they're, by the way, perfectly fine with spending a couple million dollars on Guatemalan sex changes and Sesame Street in Iraq and DEI in Burma and $1.1 billion a year for NPR and PBS and the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. The taxpayers have had enough of that stuff, and we've talked about this for a while. The Republicans have talked about, especially relates to NPR, it's an ideologically captured organization that's run by someone who calls President Trump a racist and all manner of names. They look down on middle America. If they want to continue to do their thing, then go ask your donors for money. But you shouldn't get taxpayer money for it.
It doesn't seem like the Democrats are offering any policy alternatives. It's just I hate Trump, and that just precludes everything, all their actions that they take. And then, of course, they move to the courts to try to bring Trump down with the move after the Big Beautiful Bill, trying to pull back the Planned Parenthood measures that are in there once again in a district court. I just clicked on your your Twitter X profile, and I see that you have a book coming out, The Last Line of Defense, How to Beat the Left in Court. We saw you do that here in Missouri. What's your reaction to the Supreme Court's reactions to that the president's put in place?
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned the book, because I really just wanted to share the story of what happened. And people who read it in your listening audience will really, it'll be very familiar to them. It's about how we took on the vaccine mandates. That was Missouri. We went to the Supreme Court and we won. We took on the student loan debt forgiveness scam. That was Missouri. We went to the Supreme Court and we won. We had the censorship case, Missouri versus Biden, and exposed the vast censorship network. We sued 60 school districts in Missouri for the forced masking of kids. And the punchline is it takes courage. It takes an ability to sort of write a new playbook of how we can win. in. And those were the dark days. I mean, they really were the dark days. And we held the line until President Trump could return. And now here we are. And so there's a lot of those battles ahead, but there's a lot of lessons learned. I think people will get a lot out of it, especially locally. I mean, it's obviously being sold nationally, but locally, I think people like it a lot. But anyway, the point is, the left lost in, they lost at the ballot box in November. They're losing in court now. And actually, my solicitor general, who's highlighted in the book, John Sauer, is the solicitor general for the nation now. He's doing a great job and winning a lot of these important cases on whether it's downsizing government or, you know, immigration battles. So there's a lot of really neat stuff that's happening out there that that we have to continue to fight. But the left is getting desperate. They don't really have an agenda at all. And all they have really is vitriol for Donald Trump. And now this kind of weird political violence that's aimed its way at ICE agents. I mean, it's just, it's really kind of a dangerous road to go down.
Yeah, certainly is. Well, the book, I'm going to mention, it's posted on Senator Eric Schmidt's X timeline, The Last Line of Defense, How to Be the Left in Court. I'm excited to see that you're putting that out there. I wanted to ask about your confidence. The president's leadership certainly got the big, beautiful bill through Congress. Huge deal. Right after that, we see that Comey and Brennan are under investigation. And it seems hand in hand with, here's a deep state bureaucracy that has been prioritizing their own deep state needs over justice. And then at the same time, there's a lot of these, like, don't pay any attention to the Epstein stuff anymore. I'm just wondering what your reaction is to the post Big Beautiful Bill talking points coming out of the White House.
I still feel like there's a ton of momentum. I mean, people, look, I get it. People are very curious about what happened. And as a former prosecutor, it's just hard. It's hard to opine about like what they're looking at. But as far as like general momentum, I mean, you look at what's happened here in the first 7 months of not even 7 months of the administration, where you had all these confirmations that some people said he wasn't going to get through, the reformers. You've got Big Beautiful Bill, and you got all those, you know, the no tax on tips, no tax on overtime. We have school choice now at the federal level for the first time. It's something I fought for. We front loaded the money for border security and deportations and our military so we can keep safe. And that's important, Andy, because the Democrats in our budget battles here typically hold those things hostage. They say, well, you're not going to get money for a border wall unless we do X, Y, and Z. So part of the behind the scenes thing there was we want to front load all that. So the money's already obligated now to go do those things that we believe in, and the Democrats have no leverage there. So, and then now we've got the rescissions package. It's important for us to get that done. And then you've got all these trade deals that I think are going to play out over the fall. And the reason why that's important, it's all happening at one time, is it gives enough runway for that to kind of filter its way into the economy, more opportunity for people. You get into the midterms, certainly by the end of President Trump's 4 years, his agenda is on full display, and I think it'll be very successful like it was in the first term.
We're speaking with Senator Eric Schmidt here on the Annie Fry Show, just another minute or two with him before he goes back to, of course, doing the work of you people here in the state of Missouri. Do you have confidence in the people who President Trump has put in place in his cabinet, specifically the attorney general? You've served as an attorney general of the state with Pam Bondi and, of course, Kash Patel, Dan Bongino, some of these other names that are working hard on a lot of the things that you just talked about funding. They have shored up a lot of law and order in this country. Do you still have faith in these individuals?
I do. I think he's put together a really good team. And again, on the whole, you know, it's just hard to know what the, you know, just being a prosecutor, just you're careful to opine about too many things. I mean, I'm curious to the extent there can be information that's put out there. I think that'd be a good thing if it's, you know, credible. President Trump sort of articulated that yesterday. But this is a good group of people that, unlike Merrick Garland and others that really were seeking to weaponize the justice system, these are people that want to go in. And I think you're seeing a turn in the Justice Department. They're going after DEI as racial discrimination. They're, you know, they're just doing a lot of things, I think, for the last 4 years we saw as real abuses there. And then you've got, you know, on border security, Tom Homan is just, you know, continues to kick butt. And that, in, you know, RFK Jr. I've come to know, and I think there's just a lot of progress that's been made in this new coalition of voters we have that want to see reform, and we've got an opportunity to do it. We've got our role here in the Senate, which is why we're trying to pass this rescissions package, defunding NPR, doing a lot of the things that we're handling today. So there's a lot of moving parts, but I think if you were to go back a year from now and you could have asked yourself all the things that we've seen in the first 7 months, I think people would have been really happy to see that. So we want to keep that momentum going.
Amen to that. 7 months, not even, as you mentioned, into this presidency. So much has been done, and I think there's a lot more to be done, but you guys have been moving at a fever pitch, and we're grateful for your time. Thanks for fitting us into your schedule today, Senator.
Thanks, Annie. Take care.
You as well. Bye-bye. Senator Eric Schmidt, the United States Senator representing Missouri, says he still has confidence in those individuals who have been put in that those cabinet positions. The names I mentioned, of course, Bondi and Patel, Bongino. You can tell he doesn't want to dive deep into this story. He's in the middle of doing a lot of things, leading this rescissions package to what will ultimately be a passage, I'm certain. What I hear him saying, and you know, you can listen to his words and infer yourself, is that he's not there saying we don't need to be talking about Epstein. There's nothing there. He's curious. You're curious. I'm curious. We can remain curious. And really, to the point of him saying it's not even been 7 months, ladies and gentlemen. If you were a week out, the election's coming. You know everything you need to know about Kamala Harris. You know everything you pretty much need to know about Donald Trump because we've seen him in action before. And someone gets to slip you a piece of paper. It's like, I know that you're sitting here thinking like, Donald Trump's going to win, right? Kamala Harris can't win, right? If someone said 7 months in, here's what's accomplished. And on July 16th, President Trump is kind of poo-pooing the Epstein files. Is that the thing you're keying in on? On the list of accomplishments and promises made, promises kept that the president has delivered on up until this point. All I'm saying is as much as President Trump seems to be saying close the book on Epstein, I don't think anyone's closing the book on Epstein. I don't know why he's messaging it this way. To clarify, because we had some commenters suggesting that it sounds like I'm changing my tune on Epstein. Nowhere in this show have I been like, you guys don't need to see the list. There is no list. That's not even real. You were duped. I'm not saying that. I don't know where I would even get off on alleging that. I don't have the information. Boy, if I did, we'd have more YouTube subscribers. We'd have more listeners to this show if I was the one sitting here holding the Epstein list in my hand. I don't have that information. Neither do you. Neither do all of the people who are on X right now. They don't have these files either. We don't know what we don't know. And because the allegations are so heinous, the stakes are super high. So we're emotional about it. I'm emotional about it. You're emotional about it. I want to know, and you can check the tape. This is what I've said the whole time. I want to know everything that is true. I don't need some sort of gratification that would come from knowing that the most heinous things that have ever been imagined in the world are all, you know, all stem from the Epstein files and implicate Democrats left and right. I very much so believe there are people who vote and donate to and maybe have run for office on both sides of the aisle. I don't think that there is a partisan discrimination existing in anything that has to do with Epstein. I think it's power and moral decay on one side, and then the rest of us who can be kept out of the know on the other. And I would like to be in the know. But I don't need to be in the know more than I need, A, the victims to be protected, B, for what is brought into the public eye to be rock solid, real, and true. Because if you throw things out there, again, going back to the president repeating the word credible, I would highlight the fact that in that conversation we just had with Senator Eric Schmidt, he said the word credible. There's something to that. Implying to me that there are people who know what is real. You can know what is real in court, but if you cannot prove it, what's the phrase? Beyond a reasonable doubt, you don't win the case. And it would be silly for the Trump administration to spew all of this information into the public if there are ramifications that they're choosing to pursue that don't quite have everything on lock. I don't have the answers. I want the truth, and I can handle the truth, but it needs to be real, and it needs to not be positioned in a way that it can be wiped out of credibility because I believe it would have been manipulated with. We'll wait and see. Guys, we are not 7 months into this presidency. Will we be talking about the Epstein files for years to come? I think we will. So let's not waste an entire beautiful Wednesday freaking out about something we have no control over. Let's trust and verify again and again and again and make sure that we stay the course. That's my advice. I'm not giving anybody a pass. These are my thoughts, my opinions. I'm entitled to them, and you are entitled to yours as well, and we welcome that here on the show. We'll be right back. Excited that we were able to book Steve from Stranger Things to do Wiggins America today. It's just...
Annie, that might be the nicest thing you've ever said to me.
We watch Stranger Things at home. We just started watching it with your older two. Can't watch it with a 9-year-old yet. No.
Not yet.
But we call Steve Ethan.
That's so funny. Is it the hair? It's got to be the hair.
The hair
it's the
is
hair.
The starting point. But you're kind of like him.
Like personality-wise?
Yeah, he's cool. He's funny. He's serious about the right things.
He's kind of mean in the first season.
That was when we really started thinking, this is really like Ethan.
Crap.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
No, it's the hair.
Not Wiggins America. Ethan's America.
Steve's.
Ethan's America.
Oh, so sad.
I do not like him.
Ryan made that. Ryan took time out of his life to make that for you.
It was wasted time. He could have been doing something else. Today,
like
our
sugar.
Topic for Wiggins America, but the better, younger, and what was the other word? I'll just go better and younger.
Handsomer.
Yeah, that works too.
That was your list.
Yeah, it was. I forgot it. 9 social rules. Or I guess just however many we can get through. Social rules Gen X learned as kids that completely confuse Gen Z today. And there is a picture of Steve Harrington on the stream.
You just keep doing...
And there is me next to him.
Go on.
He's wearing a sailor costume. Pick a better picture.
First it was the hair. Then it was the sailor.
Social rule number one that Gen Z just looks at and says, what? Be home when the street lights turn on. This concept completely confuses Gen Z. You know, we have smartphones now, so there's no real reason when you're outside at night. Watch, I mean, dude, does Gen Z even go outside and play outside? Is that a thing? Probably not anymore.
Man.
It was when I was a kid.
The hits are coming hard from the Gen Zer in the room.
With smartphones, you don't really need to do that. You're always just a call or a text away. The idea of using streetlights as a curfew indicator seems just a little bit outdated.
Hmm.
Was that a thing when you guys were growing up?
What's that? Going out?
You had to be home. When the streetlights turn on, it's time to head home.
So I didn't grow up in a neighborhood. I grew up kind of in the farm.
Did you guys have streetlights out there?
No, it was so sad when they put one in at the corner. Now, it needed to because there was a creek at the end of the road and you could drive into the creek. If you didn't see it. But we knew where the creek was. And when the street light got put in, I remember this specifically because we could see some stars at night. They were big and bright in southern Illinois. Getting the hair right. But the idea of just going out and being out until it was like you can't see anymore. But there were night games that you could play that were amazing. Like kick the can, capture the flag.
We always played zombie tag once it got dark out.
How'd you do that briefly?
Let's see. Zombie tag is basically basically that you had a few seconds of a head start to run. It was basically a hide and seek tag, except zombies, so it's scarier.
Okay.
Reason number two: respect for elders is non-negotiable. Gen Z today looks at this and they say what? Says that whether it was giving up your seat or keeping quiet when an adult was speaking, Gen X was taught to show unwavering respect, and the disagreeing with an elder in public was unthinkable.
Yeah. I blame parents, though, more than kids, because the parents are the ones who have to enforce that. And there's this, like, I'm a buddy with my kids thing that kind of seeped in. Certainly not when I was being raised, but somewhere after, probably the Gen Xer, they just... The relationships they established with their children were a little more close than a distinct authority figure.
Now, let me ask you this, because I remember having some distinct moments when I was younger, early high school, like 15, maybe right around Charlie's age right now, where I remember strangers just being extremely disrespectful to me, adults, and kind of being conflicted between, do I stand up for myself? Or do I just take it because they were the adult? And I stood up for myself, and I remember kind of getting it from my parents a little bit. And even now, looking back on those situations, I still think that
Can you just quickly be brief on the type of circumstance where a stranger treated you that way?
Yes. So one of them was in line at some sort of public event, like you're ordering like some sort of coffee or like.
And what did they do to you?
They were just like very short and blunt with me to the point where I was like, that's just unnecessary. Like, why are you talking to me like that?
And something along the lines of that. Were you like six?
I was 15. That's what I'm saying.
You look like they assumed that you were just a punk because of your age.
Maybe. But that was one situation. I had another where I was backing into a spot and the cars, this lady thought that I backed into her because they were parked so close. I did not. And this was actually a lady from my church that I didn't know, but she was at my church.
Right, Row George.
And she was just totally accusing me. She wanted to get the cops there.
And she was wrong.
She was wrong. I did not touch her car. And I was really upset because I was getting accused of something that I didn't do. I guess I would have been 16 at that point. But you're still like insecure kind of. But I remember getting yelled at because I was disrespectful to the elder.
By your parents?
By my mom, yeah.
I'm just going to tell you, you turned out great though. I'm crediting mom and dad.
Appreciate that.
For your respect for authority. Except for those two situations. I don't know. That's kind of complicated. We could talk a little bit more about that in the 2 o'clock hour. Keep it right here. Your vote on the YouTube live chat poll. Is President Trump off course on the Epstein issue, yes or no? And come tell us if you think Ethan looks like Steve. We'll be right back.